Welcome back for another helping of oysters, clams, and katanas presented by Bolin Media. I'm Ross Bolin, here today with the newly married man, Mr. Barrett Dudley. Welcome back and congratulations, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. I have a new appreciation for life itself. Everything about my world and about my daily routine has been flipped upside down.
You've been reborn.
I've been reborn. And now, much like Toranaga and the other regents of feudal Japan, I'm ready for more wives.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, why stop at one? It's such a great thing.
just tack another one on there.
Yeah, just throw another one on there. Let's go.
I am... I'm rocking my kimono today.
Yeah, yeah. We're about to open the kimono on this show, I'll tell you that much.
Barrett, we need to get you one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and we might need to get me a different one because I am realizing as I speak that this one is meant for a woman.
Ah.
This is an XL and it is far too small.
Okay. Well, it's really, you know, it's shaping your figure in quite a way.
Thank you.
So, yes.
Thank you. That's good to know.
Mariko-sama.
Yeah.
you're giving Mariko. Yeah.
Today we'll be discussing and digesting episodes 2 and 3 of Shogun on Hulu/FX. Barrett, because we missed you last week, give us the broad strokes on how you feel about this show so far before we get into the happenings of the most recent two episodes.
Yeah, look, sometimes you don't need 3 episodes to know. Sometimes you watch 60 minutes of a show and you say, yeah, this is fucking awesome. That's how it was for Shogun. Excuse my French there, but this show slaps hard. It is really, really good, and the fact that everybody thinks so is like very telling. You know, sometimes the people are just right, and so the fact that like everybody we know is watching this show saying how good it is. My office is like all gassed up on this show at Howler. Everybody's watching it, talking about how good it is. Like, it's finding a way to hit on a bunch of different levels. Obviously, there's been a ton of comparisons to Game of Thrones. I think it's honestly the first thing I've ever seen. And I'm kind of including House of the Dragon in that. Not really, but sort of. That, like, kind of deserves the comparison.
Right.
Even that we've got, like, a Japanese pirate Game of Thrones thing happening. And it's working because of the various things they're doing. And to sum it all up, I'll borrow from a scene. My reaction to the show is much like Blackthorn being taken to Toranaga's quarters where he gets to sleep for the night in episode 2. And looking over at the samurai warrior ensemble and armor, as his eyes glaze over with a mixture of appreciation, respect, and a little bit of desire, I would say. And he just says to himself,
Shogun.
That was tight.
That is my reaction to this show. I just walk around thinking about this show, saying to myself,
Shogun.
Yeah, and obviously the show is based on a book, right?
Yeah, James Clavell's book of the same title.
Shogun. From the 70s or something?
I think so.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So there's, you know.
And there's actually, just to jump in real quick.
Yeah.
There's another miniseries, I believe it was 6 parts. I believe it came out in the 80s.
Yes.
That is widely considered also very excellent.
Right.
Like, not like it's apparently held up.
Based on that same book.
Quite well, based on the same book. But it was one of the first, you know, like well before Sopranos days, right? It was like one of the first things that from what I've read, it kind of like showed you what TV and what a miniseries could kind of be in a way.
Yeah, like what prestige TV could be.
Yeah.
But we've got the source material, right? And then I think this setting of feudal Japan is just such a fun place to be transported to because it's so very different. And I mean, even the characters within the show give you some of the contrast, right? Like Blackthorn is this loud, hulking pirate type yelling, a lot of yelling in this third episode that we'll cover today. And then all the Japanese are so very peaceful and honorable. The way they carry themselves... totally different than the English or the Portuguese.
The swashbuckling Europeans. Yeah,
yeah, so there's something about that, something about feudal Japan that is just different than any other period in history that's so interesting to be transported to, and I think that's a big piece of what makes the show so much fun.
Definitely.
You've referred to in the past that, like, with True Detective, the setting almost serves as another character in and of itself for the show, right? Like, with the most recent season, Alaska, with the original season, Louisiana. And that's kind of how I feel about the whole feudal Japan thing we're doing here on Shogun.
Yeah.
Because it is very cool.
I think that, yeah, and this type of, one of the things that this does is like, what's always fun is like fictional or somewhere in between fictional and non-fictional history.
Yeah.
People like that. You know, that's one of the reasons why The Great is so fun.
I want to learn stuff.
As well, you kind of want to like learn stuff a little bit. And a lot of these characters are based on real people. So some of the things that kind of happen, you know, with the politics and the warring and all that type of stuff is like based in real history. And I think that always adds an element that I think even GOT had, right? Where like there were real precedents in medieval times for some of these things that were happening. And I think it's just always like an entry point for a broader, you know, swath of people. Whereas like Rings of Power, for example, like you just, I can't just walk in off the street and be like, oh, okay, yeah, this is like.
Yeah, you need to be into LOTR.
Yeah. So I think that's always, that's something to just be aware of and mindful of as well, is that I think like some of these period pieces that are kind of at least based on real history are always kind of like, you know, have that extra grabbiness.
Yeah, it's rooted in historical context. To some level.
Right.
Right. Which is definitely makes it all the more interesting to me. Let's dive in, shall we?
Because
we kind of have a lot to cover. So episode 2 is titled Servants of Two Masters. It opens in Osaka with a flashback to just 1 year ago. So they kind of use this flashback to give us the precedent for how we got to the situation we're in today. And in the flashback, the Taiko is on his deathbed, and he asks Torinaga what he would think about being sole regent until Taiko's heir is 16 years old. And then, you know, Torinaga argues that this would give their enemies the perfect reason to unite against them and result in both his and the heir's death, which ironically is sort of what ends up happening anyway, it looks like, with this Council of Regents. But the Taiko fears civil war, so he orders the formation of a Council of Regents, which we obviously have met already in episode 1, to share power until the heir comes of age. So that's how we got the setup we were introduced to in episode 1. They start us with this little flashback to give us the pretext.
Yeah, it was interesting that it said 1 year ago,
right?
Because in episode 1, Ishido is when he's kind of like making his accusations against Torinaga in Osaka. I feel like he says like you've been kind of aligning your power for years, over the last few years.
I think he just says since the Taiko's death.
Okay.
I don't know if he was more specific
now,
with the time frame.
I guess thinking about it more thoroughly, he could have been just talking about the last few years. He may be accusing him of lining power while the Taiko was still alive. So that could actually make sense. But more importantly, you know, you've got the kimono on. When are you going to shave the middle of your head?
Probably for the penultimate episode. You know, that's one that I'm going to need a big reason.
Yeah.
Because it's such a huge change.
Have you determined, have you been able to suss out, or have you looked up why some of the soldiers have this and others do not?
No.
Okay.
But it's not just that some shave the middle of their head. Some also, I'm guessing it's the men that suffer from balding,
mm-hmm.
that they do like it's like the Costanza, except you've got the bald front, and then the pony in the back.
Right.
It's almost like the feudal Japanese mullet.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah.
But there are kind of a variety of ponies we're dealing with here.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
A great ponytail line gets delivered at some point, and I believe it was episode 3.
Yeah, yeah. By a Blackthorn.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
But yes, very interesting haircuts. This was just apparently a popular thing to just like be like, you know what? I'm going bald on the top. Because the friars, the fathers, they do they got the friar haircuts, which is just a little ring around. They're cutting, they're shaving the middle, the little, you know, they got a father Friar Tuck thing.
That's
from,
what I was gonna
from,
say
from
it's
Robin
the,
Hood.
It's the Friar Tuck.
It's the Friar Tuck. So yeah, strange to think about how like hairstyles like people in the 1600s were like, yeah, fuck with that.
Yeah. No, seriously. No, we look at the hairstyles of today and think they're bizarre.
That's a good look. People were saying that. They were saying that, you know what, this is a good look.
This is hot.
This is hot.
I look hot. After the flashback, we're back in the present, where Rodriguez, the Portuguese sailor, tells his religious compatriots about Blackthorn, as he promised, and shows them Blackthorn's journal. they end up not wanting the journal translated because it reveals something the Portuguese wish to keep secret from the Japanese regarding the base at Macau. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing just its existence, right? The fact that they have this Catholic base in Macau is not something they want Torunaga knowing. He ends up finding out anyway. Yeah. But then we're back with Blackthorne being presented to Torunaga for the first time, which is where we left off at the end of episode one, where one of the aforementioned religious compatriots of Rodriguez, a priest named Alvito, who is going to be one of our main characters here. I don't know if we can call him Father Al, but that's what I'm going to call him.
Okay, yeah.
He is present to translate, even though Torunaga secretly has Toda Mariko there to be his personal translator, basically to fact-check the priest, right?
Yeah.
So Blackthorne, referred to as the Anjin by priest Alvito, does not trust Alvito due to his past experience with Portuguese translators in episode one, which did not go particularly well. But Alvito faithfully and accurately translates and relays Blackthorne's words regardless, and Blackthorne explains to Torunaga, who is very curious about the conflict between these two men, the Protestants in England and the Catholics in Portugal are at war. And that's kind of that. Lord Ishido, Torunaga's chief rival, barges in questioning why Torunaga is even bothering with Blackthorne with his impeachment so near. And this was kind of odd because he's like basically, Ishido is like, hey, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You're going to be dead soon. Why do you care? But like kind of openly acknowledging like, look, man, we're going to vote to have you killed.
Right, right.
Like, you can stop with all this silliness because we're going to murder you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we see it in episode three, right? When Yabushige, like, you know, has to jot down his will real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
They're pretty upfront about, like,
death and
murdering each other.
And the consequences and of certain actions.
Right, yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So that I think it's just part of the time and the culture. Quick note, I quite liked the filmmaking here where they do like the first half of the conversation going back and forth with the translator, and then they start kind of like cutting out the translator and kind of going from like a little bit of a bird's eye angle where they're
Love
just
that.
Like, that was really nice.
Super high quality stuff there.
High quality stuff there. How do you, I think it's a smart decision, but how do you feel about them basically going English for the Portuguese?
I think it gets too complicated when you're mixing in three different languages, right? So I love the decision because it simplifies things, especially for us as, you know, English speaking.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I'm biased.
Yeah. I think for, you know, this show was made by FX. Like, it's an American production.
For an American audience, mostly.
Yeah. And I'm sure that it will have some international appeal as well. But I think it was smart, but it is like, I also keep reminding myself that, like, pretty much anytime people are speaking English on this show, they're actually speaking. They're supposed to be speaking Portuguese.
Right. Yeah, Unless it's Blackthorne talking to other English sailors.
Right.
They are not speaking English. They're speaking Portuguese. That was one thing that was a little confusing about episode one, that Cade, in your absence, came in here and we tried to kind of hash it out. And he was asking me, so are they always speaking English? And I didn't really understand the question he was asking.
Yeah.
So in our first episode, if you're not on Patreon where we cleared this up, yes. They're not always speaking English. We're hearing English.
Yes. Yeah.
They're speaking Portuguese to each other because that's the language that all these people seem to have grasped and that's being taught to people because they've got the old Catholics in there.
Yeah. And on the other side of the coin, though, I love that it's not entirely in English. I love that the Japanese are speaking Japanese. It just gives it like real, like it makes it feel real. It makes it feel authentic.
Got that flavor, baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Can't go dubbed over. If you're still doing that, you got to stop. Stop watching the show dubbed over. That's absurd.
Yeah, you're missing some great performances.
People accidentally did it with episode one. They're like, because there's so many different platforms people are enjoying this show on. It's like on Disney Plus if you've got a certain package. It's on Hulu.
Okay.
It's on FX. People are watching through YouTube TV and shit where it's apparently on demand. Some of those platforms are automatically giving you the dubbed over version as the default. So if you don't switch it, you're getting screwed.
Yeah. Don't be uncultured swine. Watch it.
Yeah, that's terrible. Yeah. Don't do that. Torunaga plays it off like he doesn't care about Blackthorne. It's kind of one of the first really savvy moves he has. He seems to always be a step ahead of everyone else, Torunaga.
This guy's a schemer.
Yeah. And so he completely sells this. He's like, I don't care about this guy. I'll just have him thrown in prison. I'll have my son do it today. Right now. We'll just chunk him in the hole. And that's that. Toda Mariko's husband is all over her ass for being Torunaga's translator. He doesn't like her doing stuff, Barrett.
No.
He's like, what are you doing out there, stuffing things? Cut it out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. As we're constantly reminded throughout all of our historical dramas, right? Like, the women folk, not treated great.
No.
Yeah.
No, they were not.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it turns out Todomariko's husband is Hiromatsu's son. Hiromatsu is the right-hand man of Torinaga.
That's right.
The old gentleman who handles his business for him.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of a general of sorts,
yeah.
is the impression.
Definitely
that,
got that vibe.
I've gathered. He's a military guy.
Old school guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then there's like a group of women hanging outside and chatting. And I believe this is where we meet Torinaga's two wives for the first time.
Yep.
His pregnant wife departs, but the much chattier and funny one remains. Mm-hmm. And then Torinaga doesn't really instruct Todomariko to explain to Hiromatsu, her father-in-law, like that he's using the barbarian Blackthorn to sow division among the members of the Council of Regents, but she picks up on what he's laying down and then puts it out there, which just kind of shows her savvy, right?
Yeah, yeah. And this, and hopefully by this episode, if you were, and I'm sure y'all covered this on Patreon and last week with the pilot, but it took me a little bit of reading to totally suss out exactly what was happening insofar as that, like, the two of the regents are Christian converts.
Right.
So they are following the church, the Catholic Church specifically, all the way to the bank, basically.
Yeah.
But that is where their allegiances lie, and what they are kind of like, their guiding principle is that those two regents are Catholics.
Yes.
And so that's where he can kind of use that against them and to start sowing division between them and Ishido, who is not tarnished or sullied by the
Catholicism,
by the missionaries.
Yeah, they do a good job of showing, especially in episode three, that, like, you know, when one of those other guys that we'll get to that is already a Catholic, that is converted and is on the Council of Regents, like, the priest is sort of calling the shots for him.
Yes.
Like, he's trying to appease this priest because he has bought in to the Catholic way, and yeah, so it's interesting. A little micromanagement there, right? Mm-hmm. The church has kind of stepped in, and is, as we find out, trying to take over. They're trying to take over this region.
They're slowly but surely, and they're kind of like acting as puppeteers a little bit here with their claws into some of these regions.
Yeah, it just gives you a cool picture of how, like, religion has often, throughout the course of history, kind of gone out of their box or their realm and, like, they've gotten to the whole power struggle, Game of Thrones type shit since time immemorial. So in prison, Blackthorn meets an extremely educated old priest prisoner who somehow knows everything about what's happening with the Council of Regents and, like, teaches Blackthorn. I liked the character. I didn't understand how he was so goddamn in on everything.
Yeah. So at one point, okay, I put on subtitles for that for one of their little conversations.
Yeah.
There, where he, I believe, says that he was a man of the cloth. He was a,
yes,
a Portuguese Catholic priest.
Yeah. Okay. So that's where he would have
figured
gotten
out
some info.
What all was happening. Like, realized that they weren't in it to save people's souls, but were only in it for greed and money, and that all of this was kind of a sham to you know, expand their trade and expand the territory of Spain and Portugal, right? And he, like, I can't remember if he says he tried to do something about it or if he just quit, but he became persona non grata,
and that's how they chunked him in prison
and got thrown in prison.
Okay,
but
there you go.
I think he was involved. He was at one of the priests,
a true man of the cloth,
yes,
a true believer who was
correct,
disgusted by the treachery and the bribery. And
that's
the,
right.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, that old priest tells Blackthorn about Torinaga's family heritage, how him and his people from their region, like, dominated as shogun for a long time. He tells Blackthorn about the cursed black ship that the Jesuits used to dominate trade, how it's like a secret. All the trade goes through the Portuguese because China and Japan hate each other, and how the church incited a rebellion and smuggled guns from a secret base in Macau. And it sounds like that rebellion was when the Taiko was still alive. The reason you had to turn on subtitles here is because this old man threw an incredible amount at us in like a 30-second span.
Yes.
Just to be transparent, I am watching the show with subtitles at all points.
Okay.
Because we're already doing subtitles when they're speaking Japanese.
Right.
And there's shit like this where I'm like, wait, what? Who? What? I got to know.
Yeah.
I got to know without having to do three rewatches of every episode because we're doing this podcast. So,
yeah,
I'm watching with subbies the entire time.
Yeah, that makes sense. So just to jump to that real quick, like, I think I have this sorted through, right? I'll wait for the map scene.
Okay,
before
cool.
Before dissecting it further.
We get a few scenes of Ishido, like, hanging out in his quarters, getting ready for the day, but he keeps, like, looking over at the armor in the corner of the room and seems, like, shook by it. Mm-hmm. I don't really know what's happening here. It's almost like because he's doing, like, stamping and, like, doing, you know,
It ties into the conversation that he has in a minute,
right?
It's like, what have we become, basically? We're bureaucrats. We're silly bureaucrats stamping papers.
Yeah. He wants to be a warrior. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the rest of the Council of Regents tells Ishido that before the deal with Torinaga and his fate, before they vote on that, they want Blackthorn killed, right? Prison is not enough. They need this man dead. They're not going to vote on Torinaga to help Ishido's bigger plan of doing away with him until they take care of Blackthorn. Like you said, Ishido is not a Christian like these other three dudes who are there. I think it's all three of them. It's the two that are not suffering from leprosy, and then the one that's in the carriage with the leprosy. I think they're all three Christian, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
And they're telling him what to do next. So Torinaga's plan of using the barbarian to sow dissent is already working at this point.
Yeah.
It works throughout the course of these two episodes flawlessly.
Flawlessly, quite flawlessly.
But yeah, it starts early. So Alvito meets with this Captain Ferreira, who's the guy that's captaining the Black Ship. Mm-hmm. He's the Portuguese captain of the Black Ship, which is apparently the most valuable trading vessel in Japan. It took me through the second watch to fully understand, like, what the deal is with the Black Ship.
Right.
Then Alvito goes and talks to Tota Mariko, who we learn was his pupil. That's the chick that's been translating for Torinaga. So she was trained up by this dude, Alvito.
Yep.
He is who taught her Portuguese.
Right.
And he refers to her as Lady Maria, which was confusing as shit for me. I was like, who the hell is Lady Maria? What the fuck?
That's her Portuguese Christian name.
Yes, yeah. That's correct. And so one of the things I've been utilizing to understand what the hell is happening at all times, which I referenced multiple times on last week's show, is fxnetworks.com/shows/shogun/viewers-guide/characters, where they have a full break, like a little paragraph for each character with their face and name. So if you're struggling, I'm once again reminding you that exists because I have it pulled up as we speak.
Yeah.
And I'm using it to do today's podcast. So, yeah, he talks to Lady Maria about, like, apparently she's had dark thoughts that she's confessed to him in the past. I believe we're referring to suicidal thoughts, because there was some mention in the episode one about, like, her or somebody wanting to kill themselves after, or she lost her father or some other family member or something, and I guess she had told the priest about that. But yeah, that comes up here briefly. Just something to keep an eye on with old Lady Maria / Toto Mariko.
Okay, I'll just say it.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought he might have also been talking about sex thoughts.
Oh, okay. It's entirely possible.
I don't know. Because then he's like, when he first said that, I was like, oh, was he catching a vibe between Mariko and
Blackthorn?
And Blackthorn.
Well, it did seem like he did catch a vibe.
And then he brought up these thoughts that she had confessed.
Oh,
but then he says, no matter what your feelings are, like how bad they are about the Anjin, what he's done is worse.
Yeah.
So that doesn't track when he adds that. Like he basically implies that she is feeling apprehension about Blackthorn. And then it's like, but it's way worse than that.
I think he might be onto something, though, because look, the vibes between Blackthorn and Tota Mariko were very, very straightforward from the get-go.
Yeah.
So it would make sense that Alvito had picked up on that.
What you're saying is you think they want to touch the rain and the clouds
and
pillow with each other?
Yes. Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. And no, it does make sense that he would have been saying, like, look, I'm picking up on something between you two.
Uh-huh.
She's already said, like, I don't like translating for him because of the way he treats you. And I think he realizes she's maybe just saying that to put him off the trail.
Yeah.
So he's like, look, no matter what you think about this guy, it's much, much, much worse.
Yeah, yeah.
Keep that thing in your pants.
Right.
No pillowing. No clouds. No rain. And yeah, so maybe she had shared her horny thoughts.
With
Alvito. He just said dark, and I assumed like, oh, she's got some suicide issues. Anyway, moving on. Lord Ishido visits Yabushige and tells him about how the Taiko picked his stone for the corner of the palace and then awarded him a seat on the council. He's like, everybody brought a stone, but my stone was the best stone.
And then did you put two and two together and you were like, ah, a cornerstone.
With what do you mean?
Well, like, he's talking about a stone, and then he's like, and then my stone was used for the corner.
Yeah, yeah, it's a cornerstone.
It's a cornerstone.
The cornerstone.
And then, like, that's like a, you know, that's a big deal. That's a...
For sure.
Yeah.
A great honor.
That's a great
Everybody
honor.
Wants their stone chosen to be the cornerstone.
So much so that we use the term to indicate when things are you know...
Most important.
Are very important.
Yeah. So, Ishido wants to know about...
But yes, I quite liked it, though.
You know? This conversation was great.
It was, yeah.
It was great. There's, a lot of subtle humor.
The whole squad brought stones, Ross.
But his stone got picked.
Yeah.
The best stone, Barrett. Yabushige, you can tell, is kind of like, yes, glorious stone. It's a beautiful stone. Great work, sir.
Yeah, what they're doing with the Yabushige character is, it's just really good. Like, I don't know if he's like... You know, if he's going to be set up for like a whole like hound type arc.
That's what you feel like, though.
But
right?
Already he's kind of funny. Like, he's got swag.
And he's clearly a little nuts.
But also, you know, he boiled that dude. So.
Deeply disturbed individual with some serious fucking issues.
Yes, yeah.
But very entertaining. And yes, he's got a lot more like personality than most of the people he's surrounded by that kind of comes out through these funny little lines and stuff.
So, I mean, you talked about the kind of like the quiet, calm, of most of the Japanese characters
and the samurai
and the Japanese
in general,
people
yeah.
and the samurai
yeah.
in general, right? And you can kind of see with Yabushige that he is like, he's coloring outside of those lines a little bit. He's like a little bit more frenetic. He's just got a little bit of
More piratey.
He's a little bit of that energy is kind of escaping from the super tranquil demeanor of a guy like Torinaga.
Yeah, just a little bit. As he's boiling people alive and engaging in three ways. Yeah. Yeah, he's having a party. The rest of these people are boring as hell. So Ishido wants to know about Blackthorn the Barbarian, and Yabushige tells him what he thinks about why Torinaga might value Blackthorn. He's like, well, you know, the ship, it's got all these guns on it, kind of lays out that whole... The Christians, it seems like the Christians have guns.
Mm-hmm.
Ishido not being one of the Christians. Yabushige is kind of selling him on the same thing he sold Torinaga on. Like, hey, you could use this guy.
Right.
Get in good with these Christians or whatever. It's a power play, right?
Yep.
And Yabushige then expresses concern over what will happen to his person after Torinaga is impeached and killed, telling Ishido that he will need Blackthorn against the Christian regents, and that he can prevent Blackthorn's already ordered execution on Ishido's behalf so that the Christian regents don't know who did it, right? This was another one of those scenes that, like, if you're not really, really paying attention, kind of sneak past you.
Yep.
And definitely did for me the first time through. So as Blackthorn is being transported to be executed at the behest of Ishido and the Council of Regents, a bunch of bandits hired by Yabushige ambush and kill Blackthorn's captors. Then Yabushige and his men kill the bandits and take Blackthorn. And like immediately I was like, wait, okay, so but why not just, is it because they needed the bandits' bodies to be able to be like, look, it was these guys.
Yeah, yes.
Bummer for the bandits.
They needed the evidence of that the bandits had been there. Like, we caught them and or something. I don't know.
But this is twice as funny because Torinaga is pretty much immediately like, yeah, lots of bandits running around, huh? Like, you see straight through what Yabushige has done here.
Yeah, this is the Heath Ledger Joker opening of Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. You got to get all the people to do the job, and then you got to kill all the people.
That's how it goes.
That's how it goes.
Yeah. Yabushige trains Blackthorn to say, I am a dog in Japanese. That was kind of a fun scene.
Which is kind of what Ishido?
Yes.
Ishido wants to do as well, right? He's going to kill Torinaga with the help of the regents, and then he's going to turn on the rest of them and kill them too.
Because he wants to become shogun.
Shogun.
Yeah. Everybody wants shogun. Shogun.
Yeah.
Yabushige then returns Blackthorn to Torinaga and tells Torinaga that this was bandits. Again, Torinaga sees right through that. And then with Toda Mariko, or Lady Maria, as translator, Torinaga apologizes to Blackthorn about his imprisonment, asks him about his home country, basically interviews him, and then has him draw a map of the world. Now, this is probably the coolest scene in the show up to this point.
I mean, probably through three episodes, I would say.
Yeah.
Still is pretty, pretty, like, it just kind of, like, you get kind of goosebumps watching this one because it's a giant reveal. It feels weighty. You understand, like, the gravity of it. And then, like, you can start to see, like, the respect building between these two guys as well. So
definitely.
Very, very cool stuff.
Blackthorn draws his map in the sand with a ladle and explains how he came to find Japan through Magellan's Pass, which is the Spanish and Portuguese secret passageway, essentially. Again, Blackthorn is English. That's something I keep having to remind myself.
Yeah, that he actually is English.
Like, he's an English guy.
Yeah.
He's not Portuguese.
He's not Dutch.
He's not a Spaniard. He's not Dutch, even though he's flying or, you know, yes, sailing for the Dutch. I keep having to remind myself, like, he's English. He's English. He's English. Blackthorn tells Torinaga about the secret Catholic fortress in Macau that's used for gun running, which, again, apparently has some tie to, like, an attempted overthrow of the Taiko at some point.
Yeah, okay. So finish what he says, and then we'll try to parse this.
He also explains that Portugal and Spain signed a treaty splitting the undiscovered land of the entire fucking world, I guess, between them, and that Japan falls in the Portuguese half, so it belongs to them, and that the Portuguese intend on replacing all non-Catholic leaders within their territory with Catholic leaders. I would note, Toda Mariko / Lady Maria plays it pretty fast and loose with the translating.
A little bit.
She's taking some liberties to carve out, like, niceties, but in some of the lines, I'm like, well, hold on now. That's not exactly what he said.
Yeah, right.
You're leaving
right.
out, like, some of the important context. Like, yeah. What the fuck? It was just interesting how it, I mean, it's showing you, obviously, the importance of translators and how important that job is, but, like, she was definitely doing her own iteration of it, right?
She has also said in episode one and maybe even at the beginning of episode two that, like, she's working to gain back her full proficiency in Portuguese.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, so I think we're also supposed to maybe take from this a little bit that, like, it wouldn't be a perfect translation because
she's doing her best.
She's doing her best. Like, she is pretty good at Portuguese, but maybe not, like, entirely fully 100% fluent. And then also stuff does get lost in translation, right?
That too.
There's not always a one-to-one.
Well, but she was even taking some of the stuff that Torinaga says and, like, giving a dumbed-down version back to Blackthorn, which I just thought was, like, it was interesting. You're definitely supposed to be wondering what's going on with her, right? And Torinaga has also asked her repeatedly, I know you're religious. Is your religion going to interfere with you being able to do your job for me, right? Torinaga tells Blackthorn he'll be staying in his personal quarters in the West Palace tonight because there are bandits lurking. Again, it seems like he's straight up saying, I don't trust the man to my right, Yabushige, to not steal you away.
Yeah.
Which, and he ends up, his fears are obviously warranted. Okay, so let's map scene.
Yeah, map scene. So I think the key part here is that the Japanese and the Chinese at this moment in time really hate each other.
Right.
And so the Portuguese want to operate this trade arrangement with the Japanese, but not let them know that they are also cutting deals and trading with the Chinese.
Yeah, they're kind of an intermediary.
Because I think that would inflame their relationship with the Japanese. And then to make matters worse, they do have that base in Macau, which is being serviced and guarded by Japanese dudes, by
they've converted.
Ronin, by the Ronin,
the
Japanese mercenaries. And that is where the guns came from. The guns basically came from China that were used in some type of, like, uprising.
Attempt to overthrow.
And so that, again, that would be really bad for the Japanese to know that not only did the Portuguese, who they're trading with, like, supply those guns and those Western weapons or whatever, but, like, that they also came from, like, a relationship with the Chinese.
Yeah. Yeah, so, it's complicated.
So it's very complicated.
Big mess over here.
But much as, you know, much like the Protestants and the Catholics here hate each other and the English and Blackthorn despise the Portuguese, like, similar tension, I would say, between Japan and China.
Yeah. Definitely. A lot of people hating each other over there.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's kind of, this scene is so cool because it gives you kind of the context for everything that makes the show interesting.
Yeah.
Right? I can't really think of a comparison in Game of Thrones, but what makes Game of Thrones so much fun is that there's, like, all of these people, they all fucking hate each other. They're all vying for the same throne sort of situation.
Yeah.
This is not exactly that. It's not apples to apples, but, I mean, you could argue it's even cooler in a way because, again, there's historical context for it. that's more straight up. And there's, it's like, it's politics and religion and all this shit like mashed together.
Where did this Cosmo Jarvis guy come from?
One is Cosmo Jarvis?
Black, he's Blackthorn.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You mean the actor?
Yeah.
Where did he come from?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like,
not a freaking clue, man.
He's really good. He's
really interesting looking guy.
And very interesting looking as well. And I feel like I've never seen him in anything. So
he kind of crushes this role, to be honest. Like, that, what I was speaking to earlier, that he has to, he's very brash, very loud. In episode 3, which we'll get to in a second, he uses tactics that are like so out of place, like stands out like a sore thumb amongst the Japanese. And I think it's hard to really do that without it coming off as silly. I mean, you want it to be silly because it's very funny at different points, but it's all, you have to take it seriously as well. Believe it. It has to be believable.
Yep.
I think he's doing a really, really good job. Definitely, you know, one of the high points of the show so far, I think, is that his character is working really, really well.
Yeah. And he... You know, you are talking about how you kind of have to remind yourself that he's English. I kind of have to... I'm listening to him talk and, like... He's doing a very brash kind of, you know, bull in the china shop English guy.
Yeah.
But also, and I think intentionally, there's a little pirate in that voice.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's another thing that I think is like sort of supposed to be a question right now is like, okay, is this dude a pirate or is he a merchant? Like, and also, where do you draw the line in between those two?
Well, I think that's two, right? The larger point.
Is that... Exactly, like kind of the same almost, right?
Well, and it's in the same way that like the Japanese are referring to Blackthorn as a barbarian.
Uh-huh.
Blackthorn is referring to the Japanese as barbarians. The definition of a pirate's kind of in the eye of the beholder, right? It's like if you aren't with the country that is paying the merchant, then that merchant to you is probably a pirate. I would also note that when he speaks, I can't stop thinking of the video game Assassin's Creed Black Flag, which is the pirate Assassin's Creed, because he talks exactly like they do in that game.
Okay.
So I'm assuming that's like a very historically accurate dialect as well, because it's like tit for tat, the exact same fucking thing as from Assassin's Creed Black Flag. Great game. All-time video game, by the way. If you love pirates, I highly recommend it. Blackthorn tries to talk to Tota Mariko / Lady Maria about trusting these Christian priests that she follows. Like, he's just throwing her, like, a warning. And, you know, their relationship is something to really keep an eye on because, like we said, early sparks, very obvious that they have some draw to each other. Alvito tries to talk Torinaga into letting the black ship leave. But Torinaga says, yeah, we're not going to do that until we figure out what's going on with Macau, where your church has built a secret base. And Alvito's like, God damn it. Then the episode ends after an assassin makes an attempt on Blackthorn's life, although initially it appears they're trying to assassinate Torinaga because, remember, they switched quarters. And it made me wonder, like, Torinaga was obviously suspicious that someone might, and Yabushige's the someone, I think, in this particular circumstance, that someone might make an attempt on Blackthorn's life or try to take him in some way. So that's why he had him sleeping in his quarters. That's why they switched rooms, basically.
Yes. Now, his suspicion of Yabushige turns out not to be correct. It's not Yabushige that dumps that info and sends the assassin. But yeah, this is another savvy play from Torinaga, right?
Yeah.
He knows that because of what Yabushige has done, that there's a likelihood, and then especially because he knows that he's about to go tell the Portuguese priest.
Right, Alvito.
Alvito, thank you, that he's not letting the black ship leave, that there's a good chance that somebody comes for Blackthorn.
Yeah.
And they do, and it is a very specialized female assassin who has trained her entire life.
And been working there for several years,
waiting for her moment
to be activated.
Activated.
She's fucking sleeper agent
Jason
assassin.
She is Jason Bourne.
Crazy, dude.
For the feudal Japan era. Yeah, yeah.
Man, so she's working as a maid in Torinaga's house, and like she stabs
she
and
goes
slits
off.
A whole bunch of throats, dude. She kills like 10 people.
She kills a lot of people.
In 20 seconds.
And they don't seem they're pretty nonplussed about all the death that happens here.
Yeah, again, interesting relationship with death.
Yeah.
These Japanese, it's like... They don't really fear it. It doesn't seem, and they don't really like to acknowledge it a whole lot after it's occurred or something.
Right.
I don't know. But again, yeah, a lot of people died here at the very end of this episode too.
But yeah, they take her out. Torinaga, he's there. He's ready.
Oh yeah, yeah. He pops out one little sword slash, slits her neck.
Mm-hmm.
And then the cool part of that scene is when she stands up and like Blackthorn is there and so is Torunaga. And then as a viewer, you're supposed to realize when she goes for Blackthorn, not Torunaga,
right.
What has happened here.
Yep.
And then they give her a little push out onto the sand. it's cool. Like they don't have lawns. They've got like sand pits that are raked to look like art.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sort of bummed for that one. It was really pretty, and then she just kind of lands in it and screws it all up. I was like, aw.
Well, the good news is that, you know, they can put it back. They can redo it.
That's true.
Yeah.
They've got the special rakes. All right, we'll move on to episode 3. But first, Barrett, sometimes when the end of the day rolls around, I am simply too tired to cook or don't have all the ingredients I need to make dinner, and I just want to melt into my couch and watch an episode of my favorite TV show and for a delicious meal to magically appear in front of me. That is when I turn to today's sponsor, Factor. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. So what are you waiting for? Get started today and get after your goals. We're talking two-minute meals, people. Fuel up fast with Factor's restaurant-quality meals that are ready to eat and heat and eat whenever you are. Pancakes, smoothies, and more. Discover a wide variety of easy options for the entire day, like breakfast, midday bites, and more. No prep, no mess meals. Factor meals are ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. And they're flexible for your schedule. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. I've got two kids and too many dogs, and at the end of the day, it can be extremely chaotic as a result. So it's nice that on some nights when my wife and I are just flat out of energy, we can turn to Factor to make sure we're still eating well. I've probably had all 35 different meal options at this point, and everything Factor delivers is phenomenal. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, premium options with no cooking required. Sign up and save. We've done the math. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. Head to factormeals.com/OCC50 and use code OCC50 to get 50% off. That's code OCC50 at factormeals.com/OCC50 to get 50% off. Details and link in the description of this episode. Moving on to episode 3, which is titled Tomorrow is Tomorrow, which opens with Yabushige writing up and approving a will, which I think it's something he does every single day. I think he gets a different copy of the will every day.
Okay.
He's just constantly preparing for death. And apparently he thinks today is going to be the day. He suspects that Torunaga will blame him for the assassination attempt.
Yeah.
And so he's getting ready to die.
Yeah.
Ready to die, as Biggie said. So Torunaga meets with Yabushige and asks him about the Society of Amida, which is the infamous assassins.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he calls Torunaga out without having to really be specific, saying, like, look, I know you're like two-timing me here. You're doing shit with Ishido. You're doing shit with me. Like, what the fuck? And Yabushige thinks he's about to die, but instead of executing him, Torunaga asks what Ishido promised Yabushige in exchange for killing Blackthorn, and then offers Torunaga an alternative to death.
Not for trying to kill Blackthorn, just for like
the flat out betrayal.
Yeah, just of two timing him, of getting him, of getting Ishido Blackthorn, basically.
Okay, yeah.
Just and I'll just call it back. The when Alvito goes back to the other father and reports what has happened, that they're not going to let the black ship. There's that scene with the one regent, and that regent is like, I'm going to take care of
this.
I'll
handle this.
And so that's who sends the assassin. The
okay.
Amida.
Yeah. Okay, good call.
Yabushige is just in trouble but Torunaga knows what's up here. This guy's like, he's playing both sides. He wants to live. He wants to continue his fief.
His fief. Yeah.
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 So he's you know.
Torunaga knows that Yabushige stopped the execution of Blackthorn at the behest of Ishido.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
Right. Okay. So he tells, Torunaga tells Yabushige, he wants him to escort Blackthorn and Lady Kiri, who's the woman who lost her baby and husband as a result of episode 1. Safely to the Ajiro fishing village, and in exchange, Torunaga will expand Yabushige's fiefdom.
Yeah.
Fief. So from there, Captain Ferriera meets with Alvito the priest, who tells him that the black ship he commands cannot yet leave port. But Ferriera says, like, fuck that, I'm leaving anyway. We don't want to lose the wind.
Is it Ferreira? Ferreira?
It's F-E-R-R-I-E-R-A.
Yeah, I think that's Ferreira.
Ferreira?
Like Jerry Ferreira.
So not Ferriera?
Jerry Ferreira, a.k.a. Turtle on
Entourage?
On Entourage, thank you.
Okay. Our turtle captain.
I think that's right.
Then Lady Kiri, who is, again, Hiromatsu's daughter. Hiromatsu is the right hand of Torinaga. Lady Kiri and the woman who, or she's also the husband, or the, she's the woman whose husband sacrificed their baby and then committed seppuku. Excuse me. So it's not Lady, oh wait, yes. Lady Kiri is the one he's asking. Sorry, ignore me. Torinaga is asking Yabushige to escort this woman that I am now talking about, Lady Kiri, along with Blackthorn, safely to the Ajiro fishing village.
And Lady Kiri is
Hiromatsu's daughter.
Like full daughter or daughter or, yeah?
I believe so.
Granddaughter, I think.
Granddaughter.
I think
you're
granddaughter.
Right. Yeah, that sounds correct. His favorite granddaughter.
Yeah.
Because he gives her the ashes.
Right.
Of her husband and baby, and then tells her, hey, you're going to be leaving for the fishing village.
Yeah.
And Hiromatsu also gives her an intense speech about, like, how it's her turn now to carry the family's honor.
Mm.
And, like, the swords, he references the swords. I couldn't tell, is he saying, like, now you go become a badass female samurai? That's kind of what it seemed like.
Yeah.
Or just, like, you got to carry the torch, you know.
I think you got to, he talks about how her husband and baby basically like died, sacrificed
for this
themselves
bigger picture.
For this greater fight, this bigger picture thing,
which I didn't really buy.
And so I felt like it was more, he was more just like, now you have to like carry on the fight by like doing as told and
do your duty,
staying strong and et cetera. That was a question. There might have been some layers there that have yet to be revealed.
Yeah,
maybe she's going to take those samurai swords and adopt them herself. And, you know.
And kick ass. Hope so. Before leaving to fulfill his mission, Yabushige is handed another will to sign, but he tears that one up. He's like, not today. I don't even need this shit. I'm not going to die. And then as they ready themselves to leave, to go pull off this, you know, him escorting the two safely, Ishido shows up to inspect the carriages. This scene was confusing as hell, but they pull a switcheroo by having, like, the pregnant wife, like, collapses and fakes an illness while they remove one of the ladies that they had stuck into a carriage and they stick Torinaga in there.
Who was Torinaga's other wife.
Yeah, the funny one.
The funny one, yeah.
So she was in there. Ishido sees her, like opens the little carriage, like, oh shit, it's you. So they weren't lying.
Then there's a distraction and then they pull the switcheroo.
The old switcheroo.
Yeah.
But the first time I watched it, I was like, I do not understand. What, until they get to the woods and Torinaga pops out.
During the distraction, Blackthorn and
he sees that one person
Mariko
sneaking away.
Look over and there's somebody sneaking away.
But you can't tell who it is.
Yeah, I had to rewind and figure out what was happening.
So that was the funny wife, I think.
It was the funny
bouncing
wife sneaking away.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So on their way out of town, when they reach the gate, they're about to be searched again to verify personnel.
Right.
But then Blackthorn like throws this crazy English pirate fit, and it somehow results in the search of the carriages being abandoned. I'm not necessarily trying to knock the scene. It's just when it ended, I was like, wait, so I don't... It's basically like one of the higher-ranking guys rode up and was like, enough of these shenanigans.
Yes.
I've heard enough yelling. Never mind the search. We press on. It was just bizarre. I couldn't believe it worked. I was like, wow, that was all it took, huh?
I'm with you on that. It was kind of okay, like, I'm not sure if this would have worked type thing.
In real life, yeah.
But, to the credit of Blackthorn there, and the tranquil society within which he finds himself, everybody else is just going to let them start opening doors and get caught.
He's like, nobody's going to stop this? We're about to get busted here.
Like, nobody's going to do anything. They're just like, oh, we're found, and there's nothing that we can do about it. So he's got to throw a Hail Mary.
Well, I think a lot of them are not aware.
They don't know that they're smuggling
Torinaga out.
Nobody except for these two even knows.
So
that
he has
smuggling
to step up and do something.
That's right.
But
that
it was just
yes, like you said,
miraculous Hail Mary here. That like they're kicking his ass. They're about to go open the door, and then this guy's like, "Time is up. We roll out regardless of if you finish the search or not.
I feel like the you know, the plebes that they initially encounter at this gate are trying to do their usual duty.
Right.
And then, you know, they're like, no, we have to check. We always check. That is what we are instructed to do. And then Blackthorn buys just enough time for a superior who knows that Ishido just did this.
You're right.
To come up and be like, yo, we did, like, come on, let's get the fuck out of here. Yeah. We already did this shit.
You silly plebes.
You silly plebes.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, that's yeah. Okay. See, now I can accept the scene on the whole. And now it's much better. Thank you for that. Thank you.
I don't think that, like, Ishido was like, check him again.
Yeah. Make sure they didn't pull a fast one.
Yeah, make sure they didn't do the old switcheroo. Because yeah. I know they'd be trying stuff.
So they get out of the city. And while Blackthorn is, like, getting to know Tota Mariko a bit better, they're just, you know.
They're vibing.
They're exchanging information about each other, flirting a little. They're attacked by the Christian Regent's men. So this is another moment where I was like, who the fuck is firing on them? Yeah. What is happening? But these Christians are out there, and they're trying to get this fucking Blackthorn guy at all costs.
Right.
So Torunaga is forced to reveal himself to his men and Ishido's men. That was part of the confusion here for me. They've got Ishido and Torunaga's dudes in this pack, escorting Blackthorn, Tota Mariko, and what they think is, like, these two innocent other people out of the city, right? So Lady Mariko and Blackthorn pick up what's called a naginata, that, like, large pole weapon with the curved blade on the end of it. That is the traditional weapon of a female samurai, and it's, like, longer reach is it's so that you can, like, protect yourself. It's more defensive than it is offensive assault. But Tota Mariko, it turns out, low-key badass.
Yeah.
She kills several people. She's really holding it down. And then one of Ishido's men, who sees Torunaga pop out of his little carriage, is like, we've been bamboozled. We must alert Ishido. And, like, he rides off to let Ishido know, like, this dude absolutely pulled the switcheroo. We choked at the gate. We should have done the extra search. We didn't do the extra search. We fucked up.
Yeah.
So Blackthorn, Torunaga, and Yabushige and their crew, they make their escape in rowboats while Ishido's men come running out of the town all pissed off and screaming with torches and shit. Ah! And then Bontaro, who is Tota Mariko's husband who gave her shit for being special, he fights off like 30 dudes solo. Total ass kicker, this guy, absolutely 100% dead by the end of the scene.
And as Mariko has said to Blackthorn, like, you know, she's kind of being a little cagey about her feelings about her husband. You know, it doesn't seem like the best relationship.
Yeah, they don't seem to get along well,
if we're being honest. And she's like, but she doesn't want to, you know, salt the guy. So she's like, yeah, he's a great warrior.
An honorable soldier. Yeah.
And then he proves it.
And he gets left behind to die. It was kind of, Blackthorn's like, surely we could turn around and row the 30 yards back to the dock to grab him. And they're like, no. We've got all this momentum. The inertia is carrying us out to sea. He's a goner. He's a goner. But they have the cool moment where Torunaga stands up and, like, yells his name and then bows, and he bows back, and then he goes up to keep kicking ass.
Through the first two episodes, we're around and reminded of the honorable ritual practice of seppuku.
Yeah.
Among these samurai.
Yeah.
They have not showed us one yet.
Right. You got to think that moment's coming eventually.
And it's coming.
Yeah.
Eventually it's going to happen.
Somebody's going to seppuku.
And I thought that when I did take that, I was like, oh, he's giving him the permission. That yelling his name and bowing is like giving her permission. Like, your fight has ended. You're at the end of the line. Like, you get to die honorably now.
You,
like,
choose your death,
you
right here. Yeah.
Death, and you can do seppuku. Happy to see that he goes with the more traditional warrior's death of just fighting on until he's taken down.
Yeah, you're right. Well, first of all, good on the folks upstairs, up the staircase, for giving him a moment. They're like, now, Torunaga's yelling. We'll all wait up here.
There's a lot of honor. Right.
It's the honor, the code of honor. They all follow it. They give him time to bow to each other, and then he runs like a screaming banshee up the stairs and just starts fucking... I mean, he's going nuts up there, killing as many people as he can. Important takeaway from this scene, unless you care about the honor and whatnot, is that Tota Mariko is now single.
Yes.
Which leaves her and Blackthorn some room for wooing.
Yeah. I nitpick other shows, so even though I love the show and I'm all in, I will
gotta pick the nits.
I will nitpick it as well. Having Buntaro be like this, like curmudgeonly old, like, you know, traditional misogynist bastard.
Yeah.
Where he's like, I don't know, maybe gonna beat Mariko because she's a translator now, right?
Because
like,
she's leaving their quarters,
and
yeah.
And then calling their son like a little like nitwit or namby pamby, or like, you're not a suckling child, like, you know, being rough with the kid and all that. And then like, and then having Mariko be like, she's like looking at him like all, you know, like all nervously while she's talking about him with Backlore, and she's like, yeah, he's fine. He's, I guess, like, he's a great warrior and stuff.
Yeah.
And then dedicating like this 10-minute scene to, oh, look, he is courageous and honorable, and now we're taking him off the board so that we can open up the fiery, pillowy love between Mariko and Blackthorn.
With the clouds and the rain.
All of it was like, and, you know, I've used this word on other shows, so I'll use it again here. Was it earned? Probably not.
No, it was a little forced.
But it was a little forced. It was a little fast. It was a little, like, on the nose to be like, ah, I don't like this guy. He's mean to his wife. Oh, well, don't worry. He's dead.
Yeah. While giving us very early vibes, like, oh, well, Blackthorn and her are clearly going to smash.
Yeah. And then kind of even waxing over it with the, like, yeah, he was an asshole, and we're kind of glad he's off the board now, but also, he was a great warrior. He did give his life to save everybody else, essentially, to fight everybody off.
Yeah.
So he had some good stuff going for him as well. That's something that I could, that I'll call into question and just like nitpick the how quick that all happened and how like manipulative some
a little
of
obvious,
it,
yeah.
And obvious some of it felt. At the same time, it's like, you know, we talked about it with True Detective about knowing the episode length, the number of episodes here. We know this is 10 episodes. We know this is covering the whole book. They got a lot to jam in. And I think that you also kind of know that we need to get this Mariko Blackthorn relationship going. We're heading into episode 4 now, right?
Right.
Like we gotta grease the wheels here.
Yeah.
So to kind of
get cooking,
we gotta punt that guy. And so I'm okay with it.
A cool scene.
And it was, right. And it also was like, it kind of worked. Like, they manipulated me. And now I was like, that was pretty tight.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and to your point, you kind of bummed for the character that dies off, the husband.
Yeah.
Because you're like, well, shit, that was a lot of explanation and exposition to explain his character and kind of give us moments where you're supposed to feel one way about the guy, which is supposed to make you feel okay about him dying and like her and Blackthorn immediately striking up a relationship, which you have to assume is going to happen. That was fast and a lot with this one dude.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he goes out in a sick way. So it was kind of, it was all right.
RIP Buntaro.
Yeah. So they make their way to a ship and they board it. I thought they were getting on the black ship to start. I was like, oh, they're taking the black Portuguese ship. This is just one of Torunaga's ships, though.
Yeah, and just to talk about the ships and talking about things that you have to remind yourself of, I also have to remind myself that it's 1600.
Yeah.
You know? And so they're talking about this black ship, right? And it's like, it's the best trade runner in the entire Eastern Hemisphere, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's this like badass ship. They're running millions of dollars worth of guns and
silk, whatever.
Silks and everything else.
Yeah.
And then you get to the ship, and the badass black ship is just like
the shitty pirate
it's
ship.
It's just a pirate ship. It's just like a big ass pirate ship. Not all that impressive.
Apparently unsinkable.
Because compared to the Japanese ship, which is a little bit lower, doesn't have that like hulking hull.
You
know, that kind of like can blast through the tiny little boat ships as easily. But yeah, when we got to the black ship, I was like, oh yeah, it's a sailing vessel.
Yeah, but that initial ship they're on is just a Torunaga galley, I think is what he refers to it as. But there are a bunch of boats waiting to stop them from leaving. This is, again, one of the Christian regents has already been like, all right, we got to set up like a blockade.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So Blackthorn comes up with a plan for them to approach the black ship because they're like, well, shit, we're not going to get through this in this galley. And Torunaga and company pull up beside the black ship. They ask for an escort through the harbor because apparently the black ship cannot be sunk. Torunaga offers Captain, what are we calling this dude?
Faria? I think we got to say that Torunaga and Blackthorn, they say, parley.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They want a parlay.
They got a parlay.
They got a parlay. That's
Everybody
how you,
loves
that's,
a good
that's
parlay.
How you get business done on pirate ships.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So they have an audience, yeah, with Ferreira, I think is how we're,
okay.
is how we're supposed to
Captain
say it.
Captain Ferreira. Torunaga offers him 10,000 silver coins to invest and says he can retain half of the profit. Plus, Torunaga offers Alvito the ability to build a church in Edo, which is apparently a huge deal.
Huge deal.
Haven't been able to get into Edo.
No, yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
it's like when your neighborhood like gets a Chick-fil-A for the first time. Like, it's a really big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're going to get this church in Edo. And he also asks that Alvito get the Christian regions to switch sides and abandon Ishido
right.
for Torunaga's team. Captain Ferreira agrees, but says the English pilot Blackthorn must be left behind in Osaka as part of the deal. Did you understand why Captain Ferreira wants the English pirate left behind?
No.
I was a little confused by his intentions, his motivations there.
I think because they are like they are working hand in hand still with the Christian regents.
Well, I guess so Ferreira is Portuguese.
And he's Portuguese.
And so the Portuguese and the English hate each other.
Right.
Okay.
So I think they're I think it's just like serving as a kind of like they're tossing a bone to their guys as well. Like, okay, we'll escort you out of here. They obviously don't want you to do that.
So we need a win.
So we need a win. We need to give them something, we'll strand the Anjin. But further than that, what I didn't understand was so I guess they can't fit everybody. So they leave the galley with Blackthorn on it. But there's clearly like all the other dudes are on it too. Like.
Yeah, but I think those other dudes, that's the crew that they run into, like this crew that he sailed out of that fishing town with at some point in the past.
Okay.
And he's like, oh, I know these guys. And you didn't think I had any friends.
Okay.
So that's like, I don't think they're in any way really attached to Torunaga beyond.
Okay.
He's like, we need a ship. We need to get out of here. So it just kind of unfolds that way.
Okay.
So then that's who they stick with him on the galley while they make their way off in the black ship.
Anyway, it just seemed like not a great plan because they leave him with a ship. He's got a whole ship and a whole crew.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's get to that.
Yeah.
Alvito also gives Torunaga the journals detailing Blackthorn's like pirate crimes in history or whatever.
Yep.
So we see the black ship sailing off. They've said their goodbyes. Blackthorn is stuck on this galley. And then almost immediately, he's like, literally, fuck this. And he commandeers the ship he's on, pirate term, drives it up next to the black ship so that the black ship shields them to escape. And him and Rodriguez have this playful fun back and forth yelling at each other across the way. The Christian boats that were out there to stop them, basically rowboats.
Yeah, little dinghies. They're dinghies.
They did nothing. Nothing to try to stop this attempt.
No.
They just get run the fuck over. I couldn't even tell. I was like, do they even have weapons? There's like one guy with a bow and arrow.
I think they have flaming bows and arrows. And I think that I think what they hope is that galley, which is like much lower to the water, less curvaceous.
Yeah.
Right? They're going to have more of an angle.
They could take that thing down.
To start taking people out. They've got the little windows to the rowers on that thing. The pirate ship, the black ship, the black pearl, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. the pearl.
It's much bigger, more bulbous, taller, got all these curves. You know, it's hard to, you can't climb that shit.
It's the angles.
Yeah, it's the angles.
You gotta mind the angles.
And so they can't fire their arrows.
Can't do anything with that.
There's no rowing.
It's just a terrible effort. Yeah. Terrible effort here by the Christian Regents men out there. So Hiramatsu shows up to the Council of Regents where Ishido is meeting with Kiyama. First of all, they make their escape. They get out. Rodriguez betrays his captain to assist Blackthorn by not sinking their ship or cutting them off. They have that moment where like he could very clearly run Blackthorn and the galley into the rocks.
Mm-hmm.
But Rodriguez and him have like a staring contest, and Rodriguez decides like, not going to do this. Not going to kill you. Not going to screw you over here. Going to pay you back because I turned in your journals and shit. I'm going to give you this. Lets them live. But Captain Ferreira is like, what the fuck, man? I told you, 5 degrees. Cut him off. Put him on the rocks.
Well, and did you mention that Blackthorn saved this dude's life?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
That's the real... That's
I think what twice, technically.
That's what they're paying back here.
Okay, yeah.
That dude falls off the ship
right
in the storm. Blackthorn.
He talks them into saving his ass.
Yeah, talks them into going and saving his
ass. Yabushige's badass rescue
mission.
That's
right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was sick.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, you're right. That's the debt he's repaying.
That's the debt he's talking about, yeah.
Okay. But they get away. Black Ship and the galley get away. We'll bounce back to them in a second. We see Hiramatsu showing up to the Council of Regents, where Ishido is meeting with Kiyama, which is one of the Christian regents that has just recently failed to stop Blackthorn from leaving. Hiramatsu, again, Torunaga's right-hand man, the general type, mm-hmm. the older dude. And he turns in Torunaga's resignation from the council and then seemingly nominates himself. He's like, the problem with Torunaga resigning is you guys only have four people now, and what you need is a solid five, and I could be your man. It seemed like that was the pitch.
Yeah, okay.
Wouldn't Ishido just be like, fuck you, old man. We know who you work for. Like, I don't. Why would they replace Torunaga with a loyalist of Torunaga?
Okay, and I don't know if Hiramatsu was saying was necessarily nominating himself.
It wasn't clear. Yeah,
but what he was saying was that there has to be five regents to carry out a vote.
Right.
But it.
But why?
But also previously the other regent was Torunaga, so he wasn't going to vote for himself.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. That it was confusing.
So that
but he all but winks at them. He's like,
that was confusing because one, it was almost like a little too simple, right?
Yeah.
Like, well, why don't you just immediately resign? When, you know, I know they're playing parlor games, it's all political, they're all doing these these chess moves, right?
Yeah, and then there's the honor code on top of all that.
Yeah. So this was the right seemingly the right time now that he has escaped from Osaka. To be like, well, okay, now I'm resigning as a regent. I'm out. I'm gone. You don't have me anymore, so you can't just kill me. And now I'm not a regent, and you need five by law to make a vote. So yeah, I guess they're kind of, you know, now maybe what he's kind of doing is putting Ishido in the position to violate the terms of the Taiko's agreement, basically. Like, if you want this guy dead now, if you want to pursue this, if you want to have the vote, well, you're either going to have to, like, bend some rules and break the agreement to vote, or you're going to have to get a fifth region in here who's not going to vote your way, potentially.
Or maybe putting Ishido in a position where he has to kind of do away with his own personal vendetta and join Torunaga's side. I don't know. We'll obviously see in episode four, but that was definitely...
I do agree with you that was a little... The machinations there were a little confusing, and I don't totally understand why.
I think intentionally. I don't think we were supposed to walk away from that scene with a clear-cut picture of what happened. We could be wrong, and if we are, we'll talk about it on Patreon later this week. But yeah, that scene was interesting. Didn't expect Hiramatsu to show up there. I was just like, they're going to kill you, old man! But, again, the honor thing. Who knows what's allowed and what's not. Then Torunaga orders his son Nagakato to stay in Ahiro with Yabushige and train up a new regiment, while Torunaga himself will continue on to Edo, where I think he had like a grandchild was just born or something. I'm not really sure what he's going to Edo for, but
I think Edo's his place.
Yeah, okay.
Right? I think that's his,
where he's from,
or where he lives.
Blackthorn and Tota Mariko get to know each other a little better on the ship, and we find out Blackthorn has a 2-year-old daughter, but he left before she was born. He says he has no lords. He left on his own accord, chasing the horizon like Jack Sparrow.
Yeah,
gives
his
whole speech. Then Torunaga tells Blackthorn, hey, the priests gave me these logs proving you're a pirate, which unfortunately means death, but fortunately it will take us a very long time, wink, wink, to translate these, and in the meantime, I am naming you Hatamoto, which is a very great honor.
Yeah.
We don't actually get the definition
of it. We don't know what that is
we
yet,
just know
yes.
It's a very great honor. And he asks Blackthorn to train a regiment of Torunaga's men using the weapons from the ship and to teach them his tactics, right? He tells his own men, he tells Yabushige and his son, I want you to learn everything there is to know about barbarian warfare from this dude. And then Blackthorn accepts, but in exchange asks for the return of his men and his ship. Be interesting to see if that actually occurs.
Yeah,
I'm not clear on where his ship and men are.
I think he's going to get his men back, definitely. But I think, you know, there's a lot happening here with Blackthorn, right? Because he's, at first, he's almost going to be reluctant about, like, well, I'm a sailor, not a warrior. Like, I don't really know about all that.
Then he thinks about it for a second.
And he's like, no, I'm going to accept. And so I think there's a lot happening here. One, I'm still not entirely sure what Blackthorn wants.
Right. Well, all he wants here is to free his men, it seems like.
But even, you know, all the times throughout these first three episodes where he's said something like, no, I'm not going to die here. I won't die here. Like, this is not my purpose. Like, I'm destined for greater things. And like, and, you know, Torunaga's asking him when he's drawing the map, like, you know, what do you want? What are you doing here? And he wants to fight his common enemy. Like, so a lot's happening. Like, I don't totally know what his end goal is.
He even like speaks for the queen of England at one point.
Right.
He's like, my queen is gracious and wise. And like the translator, who again was playing it fast and loose, was like, he says his queen would like peace with you, or like a treaty with you. I was like, what? Whoa. He didn't fucking say that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think he has the authority to say that.
I think that was the one when he mentions the queen and then she says something else that I was most like, well, no, you got
the context. Come on.
Right. But here I think that there have been multiple moments along the way where Blackthorne is kind of coming in as this stereotypical brash Brit who is calling these people barbarians, right? And then like he's seeing Osaka, he's seeing how organized the town and the structure is, and how honorable everybody is, and the rules that these people live by, and
their way of life, the lifestyle.
And,
yeah.
Yes, and he's very, very taken and is admiring and respecting of like the way. Basically.
Much like Tom Cruise in The Last Samurai.
Yeah.
I don't love that parallel, but it is there.
Yes. Right? There's a little bit of that. You know, I think the issue that people have with The Last Samurai is that there's a little bit of like white saviorship going on.
Where, like, a lot of
like,
it, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I have not, I saw the movie, but it was like 15, 20 years
ago. It's also like 4 hours long. Somebody DM'd me yesterday, was like, y'all gotta rewatch The Last Samurai. It'd probably be a good time to do that for Movie Club. I was like, brother, it would take me a week and a half to watch that film right now.
And so I think this show is very conscious about not doing that, about not like having Blackthorne like take what he's learning and then like quote unquote making it better. I think he's truly like humbled by the fact that these people are so willing to lay down their lives for their honor and their code and their people and all that type of stuff. And so to me this decision, this kind of like this retraction where he's like and this kind of full acceptance of it is this desire to like immerse himself in the world and kind of like see what he can learn and like maybe figure out for himself kind of what he wants to do here.
Yeah. I thought the other read was that he's saying like, well, no, I don't even know how to do that. I don't know how to train anybody up. I'm just a sailor. And then he kind of realizes like, oh shit, this is a moment for me to save my crew.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he can kind of figure it out from there, right?
Right.
But like, yeah, well, I we'll get more of an answer on why he accepts this job to be Hatamoto in episode 4, I assume. So then Torunaga makes Blackthorne teach him how to dive in his pirate speedo by demonstrating diving over and over and over and over and over and over and over. Before finally challenging Blackthorne to a diving and swimming race, which I thought was hilarious, because I'm like, well, you just wore him the fuck out, and now you want to race to the shore? Tota Mariko, clearly aroused by Blackthorne's pirate speedo bod, and then Torunaga swimming in a full fucking robe, which cannot be easy. I was like, one of you's got a pirate speedo, the other one of you is going to be weighed down by this massive absorbent cloth that you've wrapped your entire body in.
His first dive, not bad, but it did look like it was almost a belly flop.
A little floppage. Didn't quite have the angle, no. But for a first attempt.
First attempt, not bad. Yeah.
Solid. And that was the end of episode 3. I'm kind of with you. I mean, I said last week, I agree that the Game of Thrones comparisons seem more warranted for this show than anything else I've seen, and I'm going to try to avoid talking Thrones too much for the rest of the season, acknowledging that. Through 3 episodes, which is usually the amount of episodes I take before I really decide if a show is very appealing to me, this one is. It's super fun. Like I said, the setting alone is enough to really draw me in. But I think the characters are really good. The writing is really good. The way the story is being unfolded, it's like just complicated and confusing enough to keep me on my toes and trying to figure things out.
Yep.
It's not all as on the nose as the that one gentleman's demise was.
Bizarre.
Right? And there's enough characters to where like you really have to be learning. Like, all right, this is this person's name. This is this person's face. Like. That's very, you know, GOT to me. I'm using the fucking URL that I won't read again because I've already done it like 4 times. But the fxnetworks.com thing. to try to keep up with everybody, and I've got it down through three episodes. There's like several characters that I'm really interested in and invested in at this point for different reasons. I feel like they're withholding just enough information about characters to like continue to dole stuff out over the course of this 10 episode season. We do not yet know if there will be a second installment of this. This might be it in terms of the 10 episodes, because they're, like you said, they're working off of a book here.
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to get through that book, and then it's, I don't know if they're going to make a decision to take this thing forward or not. This may be all we get, but it does seem like a hell of a lot of money to have invested for just one season.
Yeah.
I do get the feeling if they crush this, they might try to take it forward.
I could definitely see that.
But I don't know anything about the book. Hands up.
There's certainly a lot of precedent for that. I think what I've read, and no spoilers here, I don't even have them, but because some of these people are based on history,
right?
Some of them do go on to do other things past the book
that they could use.
Yes.
Okay.
But then I don't think they'd have I don't think they'd have the pre-existing text to go off of
right
at that point. So they'd kind of be flying on their own, which we know can be dangerous. But yeah, I mean, through three, what I like so much is that this harkens back to the earlier seasons where it was like the parlor games. It was the people making rooms in dark space, people making deals and savvy political moves in dark rooms, like, in shadowy places that weren't always just like, well, I'm going to cut that guy's throat now.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to burn this whole city down. It's like these smaller little like games that they're playing. And I always am attracted to that type of stuff in a TV show, whether it's current and playing in a modern situation or when it's doing this kind of like historical type of play. And then you said it up front, but like this world is just so immersive. They've crushed the sets and the production design, and it all looks so amazing. Like Americans have a history of being obsessed with Japanese culture, right? Like that's, there's a name for it. I can't remember it. I think it might be a weeb, something like that. That might be specifically if you're into anime and manga or something. But
okay.
Anyway, a lot of people love Japan.
Yeah.
Because it's a fascinating culture and history and all of that. And this definitely has wet my tongue to wet my appetite to learn more.
Yeah.
We've got friends sending us all sorts of recommendations for other like samurai books and stuff like that. And like, yeah, I'm on the juice right now. So yeah, it's just through three, it's really, really good. Yeah, I mean, it all comes down to like good characters and good writing so far. And that's what it takes.
When it's hard to do in a complicated situation like this, where you're working with three different languages at this point, a bunch of different ethnicities, a bunch of different religious stuff, a bunch of historical context that you've got to get right as well. In some ways, it makes it a little easier because you've got these historical guidelines. In other ways, it's a lot harder to really convey all of the intricacies of what's happening on screen and with all these characters. And I think they've done a great job through three. Like I said, definitely have been moments where I'm like, I'm not sure I understand what occurred in that scene. But
yeah.
Like, you can go back and figure it out, and then there's stuff that occurs later on that gives you more context and helps you understand as well, which is what
totally.
Great TV typically
yes,
does.
Totally.
There were 100 scenes in Thrones where I was like, I have no fucking clue what just happened. And then by the end of the episode, I understood.
That's a great point. I think look, they know when they're writing these shows and when they're making them and editing them that like not everybody's going to catch every single thing on a first run through. And so that's exactly right. Like, you mentioned the crew of the ship.
Yeah.
Like when Blackthorn's like, oh, I know those guys. Mariko says something to him when they're walking up that I didn't catch. She's like, oh, we don't know if they're blah, blah, blah.
It could be Ishido's men, or they could be loyal to someone that's not Torinaga, I think is what she says.
Okay. And I was like, no, I'm not rewinding. I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like that they like you said, good shows kind of know when things are a little quick or a little vague, and then they fill that in with context later, but they don't bother with like a bunch of like very clear exposition to make sure that you're getting everything.
Yeah.
And that's that this show from the jump, it did not do that. It just tosses you in, you know? And that's great. I like for a show, especially one that intends to be immersive like this, it's like, I don't need a whole bunch of backstory or origin. You don't have to explain everything to me up front before we get going. Like, just toss me into the story and let's go.
Figure it out as we go along. Yeah. Very excited to see what comes next week. So we finally figured out like when the release date is. It comes out at 12:01 Eastern time on Tuesday, 12:01
yes.
a.m.
Yeah.
So for us in Texas, It's 11:01 Central Time on Monday evening, which is obviously for
we're not watching
our old asses. Yeah, that's not happening. So we're watching on Tuesdays. We'll drop our episodes on Wednesdays. And now that we're all caught up with Barrett back from his wedding, and we've covered 2 and 3, we are good to go moving forward. Good stuff. And again, thanks to Kate Orris, our producer, for filling in for Barrett while he was gone. Barrett and I will be back later this week on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles, taking hotline calls from the Mollusk Militia and further digesting and discussing what we have seen on Shogun through 3 episodes. Go to patreon.com/oystersclamscockles today for an additional ad-free episode every single week that we are covering this show with 7 weeks to go. A quick note on our way out, House of the Dragon Season 2 apparently has been officially confirmed, according to an HBO guy, June release date, which is kind of a bummer. We were rooting for later in the summer because we've got The Bear, we've got The Boys. June is extremely packed. There's a new Star Wars show coming out then, too. So it's interesting that they were like, ah, fuck it, we're going with June. That also, I don't think, has been like 100% confirmed.
Okay.
But it was just like some high up at HBO gave a quote to Variety or one of the sites saying June. It may have even been a slip of the tongue. Who the hell knows? But yeah, House of the Dragon apparently in June, so we can all be ready for that. That will do it for today's show. Remember, we are available on all the major podcast platforms, but if you would prefer to watch, we have full video on youtube.com/@oystersclamscockles for your viewing pleasure. Please subscribe on YouTube, throw us a like, leave us a comment. If you're watching on YouTube right now, subscribe, like, comment. Thank you. For more from me, Ross Bolin, check out the Ross Bolin podcast, available wherever podcasts are played, or watch on youtube.com/@TheRossBolinPodcast. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram @WRBolin. Mr. Dudley, where can people keep up with you?
Yo, see all of my stuff on Instagram @BarrettDudley.
Go to BolinMedia.com/shop to grab yourself some merch. Thank you for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Until next time, we look forward to hearing everyone's reactions and opinions and takes on Patreon and reading them on social media. We'll be back later this week on Patreon, and then again next week for episode 4 of Shogun on FX/Hulu. Parlay!